This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Kaspersky. Go to Kaspersky.com to get Kaspersky Total Security. Use Current Geek at checkout for 50% off. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/CurrentGeek and enter the promo code CurrentGeek.
I have
Current Geek! Current Geek!
Hello and welcome to Current Geek, the weekly meetings of the Proceedings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, Geeks of the World, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt.
Oh, Scott, I missed you.
You're back from Asia.
I did a show without you because you were gone, and then I went to Japan, and then I went to Korea.
Yeah.
It's been a month.
It's too long, I'm telling you that much. But not really, because you had a fun time, and I'm glad about that. I'm glad you had a good time while you were gone.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope you had a fun time at whatever you were doing the last time that I did the show. Those solo shows, it was fun to do. Yeah. It was weird.
It is weird. We've not done that before. It's like doing the morning show with one of our guests today without him. It doesn't feel right. It feels weird and wrong. And let's never do it again. Well, until we have to. It's fine when we have to.
Well, to ease you back into co-hosting with me, we asked Brian Ibbett, your co-host from the morning stream, to come along as sort of a training wheel.
Yeah, that's right. That seemed like a good idea.
I'm the ramp to get you back on the highway.
I like that. Can you be the ramp to get to my door so I have easy accessibility to the door?
Sure. Okay. Whatever great. You need. Hey, Tom, when you went to Asia, was it like a planned trip or did you go in the heat of the moment?
I was Shanghai'd, Brian. No, it was a planned trip. It was something my wife had wanted to do for a long time. And then she got into Korean beauty products. So she added Korea on to Japan. And so it became a trip with my wife and two of her friends. And it was a blast.
Very good. So you didn't go in the heat of the moment is what I'm asking. Okay.
No. Right.
Brian's full of those today.
It was a super group that I will tell.
Yeah. Only time will tell if you are able to put that one together.
Well, I liked it. It's also with us. Join us in welcoming to the first time or for the first time at the show, Jamie Coghill, a.k.a. the Jimmy C. He's a musician and he's from Australia. What time is it there?
It is about 12 minutes past 9 in the Southern Hemisphere in the morning.
In the morning. Wow.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Hi, Current Geekers.
Hi, it's nice to have you here. Are you... I guess you're bright and bushy-tailed and ready for your day, so it's not too bad. I was thinking it was like middle of the night or something.
Yeah, no, it's all right. Actually, you know, I got up and I got dressed thinking this would be a video call, you know, wash my hair and everything. I could be in my pajamas. I am sitting in bed, though.
Oh, good.
All for nothing.
Good. Well, we're really, really happy to have you here. We're going to talk a little bit later about some of the stuff you have going on in your musical career.
Thank you.
We'll talk a bit with Brian about what he's got going on. And Brian, I think this puts you either back in tied place for most appearances on Current Geek or... You're one below. I got to do the math.
Oh, no. Have you had Patrick on that many times since I was on last?
I think we've had Jenny now has the new lead, I think.
Oh, Jenny is now the one I have to take out. Yeah, okay. All right.
The French no longer matter. Kind of like in real geopolitics.
Coming after you, Josephson.
Yeah. Watch out, Jenny. He's on to you.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Oh, this feels good to say this, but Tom, how are our headlines?
Well, we've got some good and some sad, as usual. Let's start with the sad. Chris Metzen, who I think we would all consider a Frog Pants All-Star, announced he's retiring from Blizzard to spend more time with his family. He wrote a characteristically passionate goodbye, an explanation that was posted on the Battle.net forums, emphasizing that he really is, in fact, retiring. He says, quote, "I'm not going to some other company or starting up new projects or anything remotely like that." I'm sure you talked about this a lot on the instance, of course, but it was at the top of our subreddit.
Yeah, it was a ton of we've had a ton of conversation about it there and on various other sort of Blizzard shows that are at least tangentially connected to Blizzard. And it was a bit of a shock to many. Some would say, well, he's been there 23 years. It's been a long, hard, intense 23 years. So it makes sense at this point in his life. I will say this, that you might hear something cool from Chris right here on the Frog Pants Network in the next 30 days or so. We're working on the details.
Johnson pulled.
It's a little bit of a Johnson.
He just went to great lengths to assure people that he is retiring to spend more time with his family. What are you doing?
I'm not starting up any new projects except for something that we might announce.
It's not like a project. It's like, hey, we may get together, have a nice casual chat, record it, put it up on a feed. Kind of a post-mortem, let the dust settle. conversation about life, what he wants to do next, you know. Yeah.
Talking to him about the fact that he is in fact retiring.
Correct. And he has agreed to such a concept. In fact, it was his idea. So we're gonna do that, and I'm looking forward to it. I don't know where, it'll probably be on the Instance feed, given that that's where primarily most of the people would be interested will be. But anyway, in a very real way, he's living the dream. He worked a long time. He worked really hard. He did well for himself and was a huge cog in the works over there that made Blizzard one of the most successful video game companies of all time, if not the most successful. And I think he's due a little breather. He's had a brand new baby. He's got a family. He just wants to chill out for a while and relax and get out of the video games.
How confident is he that he's going to be able to stay retired? I don't think I'd be able to. I'd say, oh, yeah, no, I'm totally retiring from podcasting and just going to kind of sit on all this pile of money that I've made from Coverville.
Well, I asked him asked him this very question, and his answer to me was that he is very much looking forward to staying retired. Now, that being said, my personal belief is a year or two down the road, he's going to get an itch to do another comic book. He's going to want to write another book. He's going to want to do some more story stuff, probably more comics than anything, is my guess. Totally my guess. He didn't say, but those are the things he really loves. None of them are video game related or corporate or big, but I bet he wants to do something creative, something personal, and something where he can just create, not worry about deadlines, not worry about editors, just make something. So if he doesn't do that, I'd be shocked.
And what you're saying is he's not planning that. Like he's
right.
And I see this a lot where people like say they're leaving to spend more time with their family. And because people use that as an excuse, sometimes people are like, oh, of course. And then 3 years down the road, that person does end up deciding to do something. And they're like, see, I told you. And the fact is, at the time that you retire, you don't want to do anything else. And it takes that time away to finally let your mind go, oh, you know what I might actually want to do, want to get back into, is this. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, Scott, and it makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Jamie, if you were, let's jump ahead a few years. Let's say Jamie is, let's say he's Chris's age. He's 42 and he's decided, you know, I've got plenty of money now. I want for nothing. What are you going to do? Are you going to retire? Are you going to make music just for fun? Like what do you do as somebody across the world with, you know, no need to go, get paid by the man anymore?
Yeah. That's the thing with art, isn't it? If you're into art, you just keep doing it regardless of who's listening, who's watching, what money there is. If you've made your money and you retire, you're still going to make your art, aren't you? Mm-hmm. It's inside you. You can't get it out. It never ends. It never dries up. You know, it's a fountain of eternal youth.
Mm-hmm. Even for some who maybe should stop, they keep going. And that's admirable.
Exactly.
Sure.
Well, with his kids, though, he
does have a lot of Aussie bands.
Right.
With his kids, though, he's got a storytelling outlet. So he might not need to create art on a global level if he's creating it on a very local level to his kids.
Yeah, that's the way I see it. Is I don't think he needs to make the next best-selling thing. I think if he ends up feeling the itch, it'll be, I want to make a small children's book, or I want to make this novel I've been had in my head for years.
That's how Narnia happened. That's how Lord of the Rings happened. Yeah. Like,
that's a good point.
Big stuff can come from that.
That's a good point. And that's the other thing I said when we ended our conversation. I said, yeah, I mean, no one's going to buy this idea that there's no more Metzen in their lives on some scale, and I suppose we're all right. But anyway, I wish him absolutely nothing but the best. I still have notions that we might get to see him at BlizzCon, though not in an official capacity.
Sure.
But it would be great to see him, and, you know, I say, hey, man, 23 years, hard labor at Blizzard. Good labor, but hard labor. You deserve a break.
And fifth chair in the Instance would be open, right?
All right, yeah, all set.
Like you need five. Yeah. Catherine Trendacosta at io9 has a column asking why Paramount and CBS all but failed to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, despite Paramount having a new Star Trek movie out this year, which they originally had scheduled to be released at about the 50th anniversary and then moved it earlier in the year. And of course, CBS working on a new TV series, which it wasn't timed for the 50th anniversary release, but they could have been teasing us with lots of information about it in celebration, which they haven't. In fact, not only that, but they delayed it from January till May now. Right. Only the barest mentions of it by either side.
Yeah. Why is it? It feels a little weird to just ignore it. Hey, Brian, happy 50th birthday.
It just passed by. We really didn't do anything to kind of celebrate it. Yeah. No, they dropped a ball the size of the dark matter ball that Spock dropped in the Star Trek reboot. That's how big a ball they dropped.
It was tiny. Little tiny one.
Well, okay, it was a tiny one, but it had a big impact.
Had a big impact. Yeah.
So I was going to say it's like the size of a drop of blood or something, I think it was, but it had a big impact. Right. You're right. Dark matter, yeah, and all. Did. Or red right. matter. What'd they call it? Dark matter. Red matter?
Red
dark
matter.
Red matter.
Yeah, red matter?
It was dumb. Oh. It was dumb. Black adder. That's what we meant.
That's what it was, yeah.
Anyway, it does seem like a missed opportunity. Real dumb. Like, you've got perhaps one of the top three franchise things of all time. You own the rights to it. You have all you need to make a big deal out of it. And we're not just saying throw money into the wind and make some, you know, silly tribute that isn't meaningful, but nobody else can do this, and the fans all celebrated.
Totally, yeah, what you do is you have a TV, you know, 30-minute, hour-long, it would have to be an hour-long TV show where you get all the captains together, and you do like a little roundtable discussion or something like that, or you know, Kirk meeting up with Chris Pine or something like that. You do something where there's a gathering of Star Trek people, and you know what? Use it to sell your CBS All Access thing first, right? Like, mm-hmm. make it a CBS Access only thing. I mean, I'm not trying to give them ideas on how to shill more money, but you know, they need to do something, and it just was such a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I don't get it. So maybe we'll get something more meaningful around the time of the series. Maybe this is just a number, and human beings are too big about even numbers or something.
I have a theory about why this happened.
All right.
It has to do with the fact that Star Trek as a property is split between Paramount and CBS. One of the reasons that you haven't seen more merchandise around the Paramount properties is that CBS owns the merchandising outlet for Star Trek.
Oh, I didn't know
that. And I have heard on somewhat good authority that Paramount was saying, well, you know, we would like to license out our movie merchandise through you, CBS, and we'll split the profits. And CBS basically just was like, we're not really that interested. We'd rather sell classic series stuff because that helps us, and helping your movie doesn't help us at all. And I think if that's true, and even if it's not, just that split of the franchise meant that there was really no one person who could say, this is going to be our celebration. And so instead you have no celebration.
So all the old original motion picture figures that I have, or the TNG figures I have, that was all before Paramount gave that stuff up.
Well, that was back when Viacom and CBS were one company.
Oh, okay.
When Sumner Redstone's National Amusements split Viacom and CBS into two companies, the movies went with Paramount and Viacom, and the television show stayed with CBS.
That is an odd split that is causing me to wonder what the value is. Like, it probably feels like for the Paramount people, their hands are tied a little bit. And if the CBS people just don't care, should I worry about what the new Star Trek series is going to
be? Well, it's a little bit
of
like, why should we celebrate Star Trek when it's going to help the movie?
Oh.
You know, and vice versa. Why should we celebrate Star Trek when it's going to help CBS with their series?
This was like Sony when they were at odds with their different departments. It's like, well, we can't have piracy because, hey, we have Sony Pictures, but hey, we have CD, or, you know, we have ROM drives out there that can rip CDs and DVDs and Blu-rays, and like they're...
And NBC's over there going, we freaking aired Star Trek, but we don't have any of the rights, so we don't get to do anything.
That's right. Weird. All right, well, there's that. Watch for more from nothing from the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. Hopefully the show is okay.
Netflix has filed a request with the US FCC to add data caps to its annual review of telecommunications deployment, which usually focuses just on availability and speed. Netflix would like data caps to be considered because, in its opinion, quote, the commission should hold that data caps on fixed line networks and low data caps on mobile networks may unreasonably limit internet television viewing and are therefore inconsistent with Section 706. Section 706 is the part of the Telecommunications Act which says the FCC is responsible for making sure that telecommunications is available and accessible to all.
I like the thinking there, but I got a question for Jamie in the land of the Down Under there.
Sure.
You guys are, I always hear from Australian fans of the shows and stuff that you guys have some pretty strict data caps. Is that the case? Do you guys have bad data caps, or are they all moaning about just a small percentage?
Well, I mean, the provider I go with, Netflix, is unmetered. So, you know, you can watch anything you want and it doesn't count to your allowance. But yeah, some of the other ones are absolutely horrible. And I mean, internet service down here is just ridiculous. Compared to Europe and the US, we are just so slow, you know. Mm. There's that the stereotype of people thinking we ride kangaroos to work. Well, as far as our internet goes, that's a pretty, you know, a pretty accurate analogy. We're pretty slow, you know. We're only a couple of clicks above dial up here.
Yeah.
Oh no.
That's not good. Yeah. Brian, you wouldn't live. You wouldn't survive.
I couldn't do it.
You've been there, but that, you know.
That's right.
So you're saying, you're saying your routers are made of sleeping wallabies?
Yeah, that's right. We've got to put a couple of possums in a little, you know, spinning wheel to generate power for the modem.
Yeah.
Wake up the wallaby. I need to get on the net.
Involve a dingo, whatever you got to do. So Tom, the reason I even asked him that, and now I think it supports my thing. Why not, or what if you ended up with some legislation or rules put into place that said, we still have data caps. Let's use a mobile example. AT&T has a data cap, and we keep that data cap in place with exceptions for Netflix, Hulu, whoever. And those exceptions are made, I don't know if they're pay-to-use exceptions. Like, in other words, Netflix would pay something to AT&T to make it so they have free roam on their stuff. Do you think that's ever a possibility, or is it just going to, are we going to end up with a fight that's going to try to force it so that no matter what the data is, no matter who's pulling it, no matter what the reason or the end result is, all of it has to be within the cap or you pay more?
Well, that's what's interesting. T-Mobile does zero rate the way that Jamie was saying. If you're on a T-Mobile mobile connection in the U.S., Netflix doesn't count against your data cap. Mm. They have that binge on program if you're still on one of those plans, and they've changed the plan since then, but it's still this idea of Netflix being zero rated. Netflix even mentions this in their filing, and they say, even though we're benefiting from it, it's not good policy in general because it stops smaller companies from being able to take advantage, because people will say, well, maybe I would try this new service, but it's going to count against my data cap, so I'll just stick with Netflix. And Netflix is saying this benefits us now, but it's bad policy in general. So they want the FCC to make sure that data caps aren't limiting people. And I think it's because Netflix knows, hey, we're on the good side of the T-Mobile cap, but that doesn't mean we'll be on the good side of an AT&T cap or a Verizon cap down the road.
Right.
Ken from Chicago in the chat room says, Aussie internet is wicked terrible, I hear. So there you go.
Somebody, it's not great.
somebody in Chicago commiserates with you. So
yeah, no, it sounds like Ken's from Boston.
Yeah, it's a little bit
wicked terrible.
Ben Gilbert at Business Insider is retelling the story of Miami resident Gia Lee receiving an Xbox One in the mail instead of a laptop that he ordered from the Microsoft store way back on March 23rd, 2013. And those who are in the audience and very sharp will already be saying, aha, that's 2 months before the Xbox One was even announced. People were still calling it the Xbox 720 back then. And it's 8 months before the public could even get their hands on an Xbox One. It not only showed up in his house, but it was covered in zebra stripes, which is apparently something they do to prototypes to make them harder to photograph.
Okay.
And as the Business Insider story tells it, the reason it happened was that Microsoft was hiding its prototype boxes in a shipping facility.
Oh.
Because they didn't think anyone would stumble across them by accident.
Oh my god.
That seems like the worst place to hide your stuff.
It really does. It seems like
where
a really
does the most stuff come in and out of our company? Oh, the shipping room. Well, let's hide it
no
there.
No one will ever think to look there.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
No one will accidentally put that on a truck and send it someplace. I don't know if it goes into this depth, but I wonder if they were required to turn this thing back in. Could they keep it? Did Microsoft respond?
They were. Yeah. So the way I heard it, they reached out to Gizmodo. Mm-hmm. And Tom, jump in if I'm getting any of this wrong. But
Gizmodo or Gadget, one of the two.
And they facilitated the communication between Microsoft in exchange for them being able to write about it. However, they had to wait until now. Or they could write about the Xbox One, but they couldn't say how they got their hands on it or something until somebody just left that company and now the truth can be told kind of thing.
Oh. Yeah, it was the author of this Business Insider post used to work for Engadget.
Oh, okay.
Engadget, okay.
Yeah. Wow, what a weird twisted deal that is. I wonder why so long, though. Like, who cares at
and
this
Gia
point?
And Gia Lee actually gave the box back. He sent pictures to Engadget, but he gave the box back to Microsoft and got a free Xbox 360 with a Kinect plus the laptop that he had ordered wow. in exchange.
He should have held out for way more.
Held that thing hostage, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. I've never gotten anything. I'm trying to think back if I've ever gotten anything that I thought I was getting an order, had my name on it, and then inside the box was something I didn't order. Has that ever happened to you guys? I've never had it happen, I don't think.
I've gotten multiple things from like Amazon when I only ordered one. There was something funny too. It was like I ordered one of something and ended up with 10. Like with basically a whatever they get from the company when they get sent a parcel of them to sell individually, they just sent me the entire box and I can't remember what it was.
Oh, because they thought maybe there was one in there, but there were 10.
Right, exactly.
Like
yeah.
Bulk items. That's crazy. Yeah,
I got like a children's game instead of the gift that I had bought for Eileen. And inside was even like the name and address of the person it was supposed to go to, but they put it in a box with my address on it.
Oh, weird. Yeah, we'll get mail in the wrong box sometimes. We got some other guy's mail yesterday, for example, but never like a package. So maybe I've just been lucky, I guess. But anyway,
we did get a bunch of books one time. Tina and I did, again, sent from Amazon. So we immediately thought, oh, it must have been, you know, Tina or I that ordered this, but it was a bunch of parenting books about dealing with troubled children.
Really?
And we thought, okay, well, neither of us ordered this.
Oh, I ordered those for you.
Do we ask Tristan or do we, yes. Did somebody outside of our family think that we need these or something?
You suddenly want to know the story, right? Like I got a box that said, happy birthday to my beloved Eileen. And I still don't know who that's for.
Yeah. Was it a children's game? No. Jamie, have you ever had something like this happen to you?
No, I've been lucky so far. And I do a fair bit of internet shopping, but yeah, no unfortunate or crazy stories. Sorry.
Is it expensive there? Do you guys get like Prime? Like, I don't even know what you guys, where you shop online in Australia.
You're going to ask him if all his boxes are shipped upside down or something.
They pack them upside down in the Northern Hemisphere to send them the right way up down here. Right.
And when the UPS guy throws it on your porch, it actually rotates counterclockwise when it hits.
Yeah. That's right. Unlike the Coriolis normal. Effect.
Sure. But you guys just use, I mean, Amazon's a big deal down there, right?
Yeah, we use Amazon. We use, I mean, I don't know. I'm mostly buying records and vintage hi-fi stuff off eBay, so I don't do too much new stuff. But yeah, I mean, I bought the entire catalog of the Turtles because it only just came out on Amazon. And yeah, it arrived exactly as expected. No bonuses.
Oh. It wasn't actual turtles by accident or anything.
A box of live turtles. Yeah, snapping ones.
That would have been great.
Brilliant.
What a good story.
Yeah.
All right, let's finish up with a compilation of footage from Mad Max Fury Road that has been posted on Esports TV channel showing what was filmed before visual effects were added. I know Scott's talked about that already this week, but of course our subreddit could not resist making you talk about it again, Scott. It is incredibly impressive.
Yeah, it's worth talking about again. I was going to show the chat room, but something's wrong with the web thing, but it is awesome. And it is, it's kind of what we thought already. I mean, there have been other things that have come out. Certainly the Blu-ray has a few extras where it's clear how much practical effects went into this thing and what was digital or what was touched up. And it turns out very little. Like, there's so much practical stuff, the wrecks and the accidents and the action on the road. The Fury Road itself is all pretty well, you know, established as being real stuff. Some hidden harnesses and things that get taken out later in post-digital. But if you haven't seen this, it is absolutely worth watching. And if it makes you excited, well, I got more good news for you, because this fall, which we're already in, I guess, so sometime before Christmas, you'll be able to buy the shiny and chrome edition of the Blu-ray release of the movie, which is the original film, and the entire thing in black and white, in a format that George Miller himself oversaw and wanted to see made. And that looks incredible. So it's not just the lack of color. It's like the creation of a new kind of contrast in this thing that just is breathtaking. So it's bad. Listen, Mad Max never quite leaves my mind any part of any day of the week, but there's new stuff to look at, everybody. So get excited and go check it out. And it's really neat. Like, no visual effects, Mad Max is better than most movies
with visual
with
effects.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's incredible the stuff they get these trucks to do. And like the one where I was sure that the one where there's like a big rig plowing through the sand and the sand is coming up from like a shovel in front of the thing to put out the fire in the engine. I was sure that was digital. I thought, no way, that was like some kind of particle generator, you know, CGI thing. Nope. Mm-hmm. Full on kicks up 400 pounds of sand in the air. Like, it's really, really, really cool. So go look at it. It's neat.
Yeah. It makes you forget you're watching pre-production footage.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Some of the scenes are intact. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So definitely worth checking out. Now, before we move on, Jamie, Mad Max Fury Road. Mad Max, the entire series, George Miller himself, it's an Aussie thing, okay? Comes from, we're proud of it. Yeah, she should be. Its stuff is amazing. It's my favorite movie for, like, the last decade. That's how much I like it. I was very curious, though. Like, Paul Hogan is everybody thought Paul Hogan was really cool until I talked to people from Australia who, like, no, we're embarrassed of Paul Hogan. We don't like that he's so cool and all around the world. So how do you guys feel about Mad Max? And you maybe already answered it, but it sounds like you guys are proud of it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. It's brilliant that, you know, something Australian made, particularly that first movie, something Australian made managed to travel the world. You know, I've got friends in Sweden who are such diehard fans of this thing. And, you know, it spoke to people on every level. And it was just such a cheap horror movie style production. But, you know, it's got the longevity and the appeal absolutely global. It's awesome. And this new movie is just fantastic. I can't get enough of it. I love it.
I agree. I'm on my 9th viewing, maybe 10 this weekend. We'll see.
And if you guys, you know, if you want to come to Melbourne, I'll take you on a driving tour of some of the farms and back roads where they did the first movie. I think there's a house, the beach house, where him and his wife were in the first movie. I think that might have been damaged in fires last year, but there's definitely going to be stuff to see.
Yeah,
sounds like a lovely day.
And the Halls of Justice is the Halls of Justice is the car park at Melbourne University, so easy one to see there.
Oh, that's super cool. That's great. Yeah, that would be, if I get my way down to Australia at some point, it would actually be on my list of things I'd want to see. Whether anyone going with me would want to is probably another question, but I totally would. Anyway, thank you to everybody who helped submit stories for the show. Tom, who helped us out this week?
Oh, DNeil99, Captain Kipper, I Am Sci-Fi, The Max, Another J. Martin, and more. Thank you guys for submitting. It's what makes us pick the elements. So
that's
go.
Right. Go vote, there. Currentgeek.reddit.com is where you do it. We're going to take a minute here before we get to our pop quiz and talk to our guests about some of the stuff they have going on. Jamie, let's talk about your music. What are you up to down there, and how can people find some of this stuff?
Well, I've got a bunch of stuff on iTunes. Basically, I just make my own music in my own little studio on, 1998 quality equipment. And I release albums. Thanks to the internet, I've met people who I've been doing soundtracks for. There's the Super 7 crew and the Sandra West Diaries guys in LA that I send music to. And I'm currently working on they call it a micro-budget feature, but this is for Joe Bizarro Studios. It's going to be a Faster Pussycat-style chick exploitation thing called Brides of Satan, and I'm doing a few tunes for that. It's going to be, you know, Tarantino grindhouse. I think it's going to be a bit sleazy, but not too exploitative of the ladies. It's girl power. The girls are the protagonists and the men are the victims, the way it should be.
Right. If anyone doesn't know Faster Pussycat Kill Kill, it's the fast pussycats who do the killing.
Yeah.
Yes.
They are in charge.
This sounds great. It sounds just up my alley. I want to see it. That's cool. Yeah. And how is that different than working on, like, you know, album music or music where you're, you know, writing everything? And so now you've got this thing where there's a definite theme and direction. Is that a much different process?
Yeah, it's totally different because with my music and my albums that I do as the Jimmy C, you know, I never know. I can't control the muse. I don't want to sound too much like a pretentious git here, but I can't really control it. I don't know where the music comes from. A song pops into my head. I got to run off and record it before I forget it. And then I work on it the next day. But with soundtrack stuff, I'll get a brief. Someone will say, I want a Morricone-style spaghetti western for this shootout scene I'm having. Or someone will send a track by another band saying, I want this dirty sort of desert sound. And I'll just, that'll sort of spark something in my head. I'll be able to go off and write something in that style, that theme. I don't know. Do you guys know the Ruttles, the Beatles parody from the 70s?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that. And it's almost as if, you know, these guys ask me to do something and I will try and think of what Neil Innes would write for a Ruttles parody in that particular genre, that particular style. So it's a matter of, as best I can, capturing the essence and the feel of the style of the piece rather than, you know, just deliberately writing off
parody.
Yeah. You don't want to sound alike because those are just, they miss the mark. You don't, you know, something slightly more original that you know has the style of the thing you want is much more fulfilling, really.
Yeah. It seems challenging, but it sounds like that's the kind of stuff you're doing right now. And if people can come to you with a theme and you can translate it into something that works well for the project.
It's great fun.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems like
and
a
I,
lot of
I enjoy it more than, you know, cause I played drums in bands here in Melbourne and we got to England and Spain playing some shows in one of the bands I was in. So I've done a bunch of sleeping on floors and setting up drum kits in dirty pubs night after night after night. And nowadays I'm a family man. So the kids go to bed, I go into the studio, I record a song for a few hours. And I actually get stuff done quicker than I ever have in my life just because I'm focused. It's fantastic.
Well, that's awesome. People should go to thejimmyc.bandcamp.com. You can find all kinds of stuff there and support it also.
My YouTube page I've been going crazy making videos lately because I've just learned how to use Final Cut Pro. So my YouTube page is nice and fat with content. So it's probably a good place to see it. And there's links to my .com, the iTunes albums and things. So if people want to see me, start on YouTube and have a look. And if you like what you see, dig deeper. There's plenty to find.
That's awesome. Well, I can't wait to go get some more myself. Brian Ibbett over there.
Yes.
You've got, so I know what you're doing because we talk
all
the time.
You know most of the stuff I'm doing. You don't know everything, Scott.
Not everything.
There's a part of my life I keep hidden, even from you.
And that part's called soundography.
Yes, I'm so glad that's exactly what I wanted to talk about because Jamie has done the theme for the show. It's a show I do with Hammond Chamberlain. We've recorded 8 official episodes, although there are really, I think, 11 total episodes. There was a pilot, there was an episode 0, there was a thing we did for a marathon. But basically, it is a crash course in music, one band at a time. So basically, we take bands that, you know, with the exception of the hardcore fans, bands that maybe you know 2 or 3 songs by, or maybe a couple albums by, and we delve deep into their history, their formation, what they're doing now, lineup changes, things like that. A lot of great trivia about the band and turn everybody into, for that time, a hardcore fan of that band. Some of the ones we've done so far, Duran Duran, Pearl Jam, Blues Traveler, Leonard Cohen, a favorite of mine that a poor Hammond had to sit through. Like, there's like a 12 or 13 Leonard Cohen studio albums and the poor guy had to listen to all of them. But
are they not all as compelling as Hallelujah or no?
They are. I think so. I think Hallelujah, while it's a great song, it's a greater song because it's been covered by great artists. Mm-hmm. There are, when you get to about the Leonard Cohen 2.0, which is about where he started doing a little bit more with more production, letting other people do some instrumentation. He still relies heavily on a Casio synthesizer for some reason. But around the time of I'm Your Man, it turns into some really, really cool stuff.
That's really cool. Yeah.
So soundography.com is where you can find all that.
Yeah. That sounds awesome. That show seems like a labor of love for both you and Hammond. And I don't know. It's a new aspect of what you do. We've had a lot of Brian Ibbett, a lot of music stuff for years, but this is like a new wrinkle in it.
It is. It's funny. This is a show that I developed an idea for back in 2006 and never got it off the ground because I didn't know what it needed, and apparently it needed a co-host. It's basically what it was. So Hammond is the perfect guy to put up with me on that. And he's also making me listen to Rush.
Oh, my gosh.
In a future episode. Yeah, we're going to do an episode on Rush. So
that's great.
I made him listen to Leonard Cohen. He's going to make me listen to Rush.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with listening to Rush. You'll be fine.
No, I like Rush, but yeah.
There's so many more songs than that one.
Than Tom Sawyer?
Yeah. Kind of like Leonard Cohen in Hallelujah.
Right.
Well, that's awesome.
Didn't they both do a song called Famous Blue Raincoat? Or no, probably.
No, probably not. You could have fooled me. You could have told me that and I would have believed you.
Right. Totally would have believed.
All right. Well done. That's awesome. People should be checking both of these things out. Okay, real quick, we're going to take a sponsor break and we'll be right back with the pop quiz. All right, how are you guys sleeping at night? Are you sleeping okay? I know I am. Do you know why I'm sleeping so much better than I used to? Simple. I use a Casper mattress. And not just any mattress. One that's made here. One that was shipped free to me. One that gave me 100 days to try it out. And if I didn't like it, I could send it back. No cost to me. But I didn't have to do any of that. Why? Because I liked it. I liked it so much, I kept it. And now I really like it. And I sleep better because of it. Casper.com. Man, these mattresses are obsessively engineered at a very fair price. Breathable designs. I got my new Casper mattress, tried it out. So soft and comfortable. And you can easily get these online. No weird showroom business you got to go through. You just go online and you buy it. Completely risk-free. Try it today. Again, a full 100 days. That's crazy if you think about it. All these mattresses are made right here in the USA and shipped freely to the US and Canada. That is free. For example, get a Casper mattress for $500 or a twin for $950. $950 for the king, a twin for $500. If you compare that to industry averages or what's going on in showrooms, it's insane. So much cheaper. But you're not going to have a cheaper sleep. That I can promise you. Go to Casper.com/currentgeek and enter the promo code currentgeek. That's Casper.com/currentgeek and the promo code currentgeek. That's going to save you an additional $50. That's Casper.com/currentgeek. Check him out today. Show is also brought to you today by Kapersky Labs. Yeah, that's right. Kapersky Labs. They protect people from real threats of cybercrime. Internet security software. They participated in more independent tests, won more awards, and placed first in more competitions of that type than any other internet security company. 400 million users around the globe trust Kapersky Labs. Kapersky Lab to protect their banking, browsing, shopping, socializing, and more, all the dangerous online threats. They're providing a special offer of 50% off its premium software called Kapersky Total Security. It gives you online protection when your PC and your phone and your tablet are in other places and you're not there watching them. Whether if it's for banking, browsing, shopping, being social on the web, whatever, go to Kapersky.com. That's KASPERSKY.com and use the code CURRENTGEEK at checkout for that 50% off Kapersky Total Security. That's Kaspersky, sorry, Total Security. KASPERSKY.com and the code CURRENTGEEK. Do it today. It's time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
Oh, there's the music. There it is. All right. Hey, look at this, everybody. It's a little game show we do. It's called the Pop Quiz. We take stuff from the areas of expertise of our listeners, or of our guests, rather. They answer these questions the best they can. Tom keeps score the entire time. We haven't done it since you left town, and I'm so excited to be back to it. Well, that's not true. I guess I did it alone, but not together. And I'm excited about it.
I did it without you, which was super weird.
Yeah, it's super weird. But we're going
to
start.
This is the right way. We're back to doing it the right way.
There's a correct way and there's a wrong way. This is the correct way. Brian Ibbitt is first.
Oh.
Because okay, you're the regular and gosh dang it, who cares? We're having you do it.
Show them how it's done, Brian. Yeah.
That's right.
I still get nervous doing these, man.
Well, you should. Iceworm has some weird questions. Here is your trivia question category. It is the Bay City Rollers.
Oh, no. Okay.
The Bay City Rollers.
Saturday.
S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y. Wow. Night.
Nailed it.
It's Scottish.
What was the title? What was the title Bay City Rollers' first album, or what was the title of their first album?
You know how quickly I blank all of this stuff out when we're done recording a show and I move on to the next thing?
Yep.
It was something like Cruiser.
You are so kind of on the right track. Is Cruiser your last? Is that your?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's my final answer.
That sound right there means you got it wrong. The answer is Roland.
Roland, yeah. Cruising Roland.
So you get 5/8 of a point for capturing the sentiment of the title of the album.
Apparently, several of the songs on that album also appeared on their self-titled American debut album, so they moved some of that stuff over, it says here.
Yeah. See, that would have been my guess was self-titled, but that would not have been right because it was only domestic. That's right. Only U.S.
Yeah,
only
well done. Yeah. What city in Scotland was the band founded?
In Edinburgh.
You are correct. Nicely done. Yeah. He wrote in here, also Shirley Manson.
They were founded in Shirley Manson? Yeah.
No, Shirley Manson also founded Garbage in...
Shirley Manson was founded in Edinburgh.
All right, who is, by her founders, her mom and dad, who is the bassist for the band and also one of the founding members?
And I hope I'm not confusing with another band. Is it Brian Connolly?
Let me check. Judges, is it? Nope, it's Alan Longmuir.
Alan Longmuir.
It would have also accepted Michael Bay. Not as correct, but just hilarious.
Yeah.
I just would have accepted it anyway. Yeah.
Brian, Tom scores these how he will.
I know.
Here's the next one. How did the band choose the name Bay City as part of their name?
Oh, they threw a dart at a map, and it ended up near Oakland. And so they titled themselves the Bay City Rollers.
You are correct, although... I think we still give it to him, but it was actually Bay City, Michigan.
Oh, Bay City, Michigan. Okay.
This according to Wikipedia, so who knows?
I know.
I think you got that one 6/8 right.
Wow. All right.
It's a little too close to a former home for Tom.
I mean, I own property in Oakland, my friend. Right. You don't confuse that with Michigan.
Yeah. Straight out of Michigan, not Compton. Right. All right. Final question. What character on Friends wanted the Bay City Rollers to play at their wedding?
Oh, wow. It would have to be Ross Geller.
Let me check. Is it? It is Monica. Ah. Monica.
Monica.
Yeah.
But tell me how
Here's
this
a
is
clip. I got a clip even. Weird. Look at
the
this.
The other Geller.
Here you go.
But tell me how this is for music. Okay. All right. A string quartet for the processional. A jazz trio for cocktails. Mm-hmm. The Bay City Rollers for dancing. Wait, that was for my 6th grade wedding.
Well, you couldn't get them anyway. I mean, Ian doesn't even play anymore, and Derek. Well, Derek is a name I shouldn't know.
I freaking hate laugh tracks so much. Actually, you know what ruined it for me? Is everyone caught up on Mr. Robot? I'm not going to spoil anything.
No, I have not watched any of season 2 yet.
Okay, well, Tom will
I'm
know.
I'm okay.
Yeah, Tom will know what I'm talking about. There's a laugh track usage, and it's pretty special. Yes. And now it's changed the way I think about things forever.
Are we talking about Alf?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. Can you believe that episode?
I have heard about this, yes.
You got to see it, Brian.
That was awesome.
You're going to lose your mind. It's such a good show. Oh, my gosh. The last one, I'm dying here. I just need to talk about it, but I won't because I don't want to spoil it. All right. It's time for Jamie's turn. Jamie, you ready for this?
Yeah, ready for it.
All right. Here is your first question. Oh, by the way, your topic is... The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie trivia.
Woohoo! Right,
from the movie, which I liked quite a bit. I'm glad to hear there's other fans in the room. I know it's, a hard movie to make, and I think they did a fine job. Anyway, who directed the movie version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Oh, bloody hell. I should have researched it. I'm more the books and the original British TV series. let's choose a name so I can get on the scoreboard. For audacity, it was Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Incorrect. It was Garth Jennings. But Tom,
I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah,
but you get 2 points for being poetically correct.
Yeah, that was awesome. All right, next question: what year was the film released?
Oh wow!
I'll give you a hint. It was later than the 90s. So it was in the 2000s. I'll give you that.
I'm thinking, oh man, I reckon it was 2007.
You are incorrect. It was 2005, 2 years off.
Dang it.
Yeah. Close, though. Close by 2 years. Tom, you're good? Everything's good.
1/8 of a point. All right. 1/8 of a point.
All right.
Thank you.
Who played Zaphod?
I am Australian, after all. That's a handicap.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't get movies till like 2 years later.
All right. 3/8 of a point. 3/8 of a point. Yeah.
Now, wait, what's the conversion rate for Australian points into American points?
Yeah, it's like 3-1. So he's way ahead of you, Brian.
Oh, no.
Next question. Who played Zaphod Beeblebrox in the movie version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
That dude I really liked in that movie that I saw him in. Oh, man. I mix him up with the guy who was in Autofocus, who did a really good Bob Crane.
Yeah. You're thinking of, he used to do The Soup, Brian. Who did The Soup? That's not the answer to this. But
no. You're talking about...
The one that became an actor.
Yeah, you're talking about the guy. Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Craig Kilborn.
So Craig Kilborn. No, not Craig
no,
Kilborn.
No, not Craig Kilborn. He was the Daily
Greg
Show.
Greg Kinnear.
Greg Kinnear.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I can remember the guy that I'm not trying to remember. I really like this actor, too, and I can't remember it.
All right. Well, I'm going to give you a big for that one. It was Sam Rockwell.
Yes, of course it was. I deserve that.
Was Moon.
Well, Jamie gets a full point because every single statement he made was true. He couldn't remember. It was that guy he liked in that movie he saw. Yeah. He did not say a single incorrect thing.
That's true. I also agree with him on all 3 points, by the way. I get him mixed up.
I'm honest. Yeah. I would never lie to you guys.
Well, thanks, man. next question. Who provided the voice of the whale in the movie?
Oh, yeah. I should know this.
Famous, I won't say where he's from, but yeah, he's famous.
Sam Kinnear.
Stephen Fry was the narrator.
Yeah.
I should know this. It sounded like Bill Oddie from The Goodies in the original series. I'm drawing blanks on the movie and all the original series stuff's coming up at me.
Yeah.
Simon Jones, Peter Jones.
All right, you were so close. You're actually close. That's a hint.
Am I?
Yeah.
Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.?
Yes!
Was he in 77 Sunset Strip or something? Why are old TV shows coming to me?
I don't know. This happens to me too. His name is Bill Bailey. You said Bill, so I thought we were close.
Love Bill Bailey.
Yeah, Bill Bailey's great.
He's great. Musical comedy without it making you want to punch yourself in the face.
Exactly.
I love him.
It's a rare quality.
2/8 of a point. Quarter point. For bringing up Ephraim Zimbalist the second time. Mostly.
That's a callback.
Yeah. Stephanie Zimbalist's father, I believe.
Oh, there you go. I don't know any of these people. All right, last question.
Remington Steele? Come on.
Oh, okay, never mind. She's the lady.
Make it Alan Rickman.
Alan
Rickman. Or Martin Freeman. Frodo Baggins.
Bill Nye. Whoever. All right, final question. Who wrote the musical score for the film? Which is real good.
Oh, jeez.
Did a really good job. I like it.
Yeah. I can't even think of it. It's probably someone classically British. I'm going to go out on an incredibly wrong limb here and say it was Professor Brian Cox, astrophysicist and former keyboard player of D-Ream.
Excellent guess.
It's an amazing guess, but the true answer is Joby Talbot. Close.
I've never heard of that person.
I haven't either.
That's shameful
Brian
of me.
Cox, though. Yeah. Have you ever seen them together?
No, you never do. Kind of a Clark Kent Superman
thing.
You've
never seen them in the same place.
So that is the quiz. Tom, how did they do?
They both did very well. Brian finished with 2 3/8 points, but Jamie finished with 3 5/8 points.
Whoa. That should have been minus. I'm very sorry, Brian.
No,
I've robbed you
right.
of your title.
He knows.
Never win this game.
He knows what he's getting into. He's been to this dog and pony show before.
I have, yes.
Well done, everybody. Let's do forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Some people don't like it when I mention this, but this used to be a show that Tom and I did. It now is a segment on this show. It's called Forecast. And it's
just the truth, people.
Yeah, it's just the truth. Spelled like the number, FOURcast. And four of us get to talk about the future. I put one in today. We talk about predictions of what we think things might be like in technology, entertainment, or otherwise. And I came up with one, and I'm going to have to justify it, but here it is. I think we will end up with transportation tubes like Futurama one day.
I feel like you've said this before, no?
No. We talked about before were that like the Hyperloop was going to be the hot new thing, and I think we may have made mention that, hey, it's basically a Futurama. But it got me to thinking about why that would actually work, and here's my thinking. They're like pneumatic tubes that are suctioning people all over the city, all over New York in that show, and they are crammed in there. Like, there's no giant spaces between anybody. It's just head to foot, person to person to person. Now, it couldn't exactly be like that, but I could see a future where I would stand in some sort of tube, and there would be maybe it's electromagnetic, or maybe it's air cushioning or something that would essentially surround me in that tube so that I wouldn't, could not and would not hit the sides of the tube. So I could move through there, you know, at a fast rate of speed, not hit the tubes on curves and things like that, and not hit other people because, again, there would be like this almost like, you know, magnets, and you turn them the other way, they can't touch each other. It'd be like that sort of thing, some kind of thing with either magnets or I don't know. But we would be in this tube, not able to make any sort of horrible collisions, thus making it possible to issue us as far and wide as we needed to at whatever speed we needed to, and we would never get hurt.
It would be like the slide at the water park where the high school senior sitting at the top doesn't wait long enough for the person in front of you to go before he says, you can go, and you end up crashing into them near the bottom.
See, that's true. However, therein lies the rub. We have to figure out the bottom or the exit.
Well, but if it's keeping you away from the sides, it can keep you away from anything underneath you.
Right. Correct. Sure. Correct.
So frictionless.
Or above you.
So you might stop. You know how I'm trying to think of a good example that's not stupid, but like in The Right Stuff, when the astronauts in training are blowing on the things and it's making the ball hover, and however high the ball went meant how strong your lungs were or whatever. Imagine a body doing that. So if you were all coming toward the exit, instead of me slamming feet into Ibbot's head because he stopped abruptly or something, I would
this
like
this is my stop.
Ah! I would bounce off of you, this air cushion of you, and kind of just sort of bob, you know, like, and then slow down and be there.
So the magnetic field or whatever just kind of acts as a cushion.
Yeah. Dampener fields. Like,
Now, wouldn't there be a breathing? Like, wouldn't you rather it be in, like, you're in a little, one of those little containers that you put your check in and the pen and your driver's license in at the bank, rather than you being like loose in the tube where there might be breathing issues, or if you throw up, everybody has to kind of slide down through your throat.
This is the beauty of the way Scott, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, well, it's going to have to be a capsule, right? Until Scott said some kind of magnetic enclosure. So there's some sort of force that is invisible and isn't a structure that keeps everything away from you. And obviously, there's going to be enough air trapped in there with you for your trip. So that's not a problem. And some kind of permeability for ventilation. Right. But if you threw up, it would just stay in there with you, just like
just
in a capsule.
Stuck with it.
Yeah. That's no different than in a car right now, right?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. You'd have a little bit more, you know, move around room in a car technically, but yeah, it's the same idea. And my thinking is, I mean, obviously there's a huge hurdle here, which is how do we make that barrier? But you see it happen with train tracks. They do this with certain light rails where the rails aren't actually touching. They're hovering on magnets. Maglev, yeah, exactly. So there's definitely precedence for that.
They actually do it with magnetic fields with things like antimatter and photons when they want to keep them isolated. A lot of particle physics experiments use that.
Yeah, right down to the atomic level we're doing that stuff now. So it could I can just see an eventuality where this could be possible. Now,
how do you land foot side up?
All right. So there's the, okay. So there's
two
hangups.
Do you have to go in feet first?
But in theory, if you go in head first, you are creating a breach, right? Like you're going to come out, you know, the wrong way, no matter where you end up,
so you're going to have to go in feet first.
Correct. So that's either the way that you'd stand in a thing and it would tip you up and then suck you down and in you go, or you would get in some other way. I don't know, but.
Well, in the Jetsons, you went head first, but then you at the very end of your route, you went vertical and then the little door slid open and then you got out.
Oh, see, that's not bad actually. But that's the real trick. Loading and unloading is a big deal. I don't know what the solution is there, but the second biggest thing is I say all of this and how neat it would be, but I need to be put to sleep for the entire trip.
So, you don't like airplane travel.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine you being okay with this.
Oh, I hate airplane travel. So if you put me in one of these tubes, it would have to be like, remember Fifth Element? As soon as you got into like the weird little tube beds that everybody slept in on that luxury ship, they immediately just fell asleep.
Lost in Paradise.
Yeah, and they all just went bruh and fell asleep because there was something that hit them in the room or whatever. That would have to be part of this. And you'd have to immediately wake up non-groggy, ready to roll as soon as you hit the exit. Now, there's a lot of caveats, I understand. But just imagine how efficient that would be if you could figure out those few problems. And then people could barf all day. Who cares?
What about your luggage?
Oh, yeah.
What'd you say?
It would be in the little tube with you. You're in the in your little magnetic space.
Yeah, but then when you exit, see, that's the nice thing about yakking in a car. If one of your kids barfs in your car, you just clean your car out. How do you clean out your air bubble? Like, when you get done, is it just going to launch in and just go blah on everybody out there?
No, just suck it out. Yeah.
All right.
I love that we're talking the future is going to be pneumatic tubes, just like your past. Because, you know, the first mass transit system proposed for New York was Alfred Beecher's pneumatic subway that went for a block and a half under Broadway, driven by a massive fan in the basement of a department store somewhere in 1870-something. I love, you know, that's taking his future to its logical conclusion.
He was ahead of his time.
Yeah,
that's right. He was. Yes.
Well, and it went down a quarter mile an hour.
He couldn't do it properly, but, you know, it was a great idea.
Sure. But it's like, I mean, what's so different about the Hyperloop? I guess the Hyperloop is more of a vehicle, and it's, but you're still in this, like, tube, and you're still flying around at high speeds. And
I mean, and if it's, you know, if you're going to specific hubs, so, like, you've got your Denver to Chicago, your, you know, L.A. to San Francisco kind of thing, and then from there you take other transportation to get wherever you're going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I guess, if you could put me to sleep, let's say I want to go see Brian in Denver, and you could put me to sleep, and the advantage of tubes like this are you construct them any way you need to. So they can go up, around, curl around a building it needs to avoid, you know, go through a river and out again.
Through mountain.
Yeah, sure. Through a mountain, exactly. All this stuff, it wraps itself around, and then there's a big, long stretch of getting to Denver over the Rocky Mountains. And what a view. Like, what a great ride that would be.
Unless you're asleep. Unless you're asleep. You'll never see it.
I'll be asleep. You can probably choose, right? You could say sleep or no sleeping.
Smoking or not smoking, you'd have sleeping or not sleeping.
Yeah. Imagine smoking in your own little magnetic air bubble. So anyway, then it poops me out in Denver International or wherever. And then I just take a Uber home or, you know, self-driving car to your house or whatever.
Why not just have it branch off like right to Brian's street?
Yeah, except are people going to be, are we ready to accept the idea of giant tube exits out in front of our yards and things like that? That'd be pretty weird, right? Maybe. No.
I mean, maybe instead of those,
maybe instead of those blue bikes, you could rent a jetpack from the tube station to your house.
There you go.
That'd be all right. I want to see a transit future that is less about me standing in a train holding a bar and more about efficient, fast, let's get everybody there, but let's do it in a way that is almost individual travel still. I don't know. It seemed like a good idea to me. Hey, if you have your own ideas for a fun future picking idea, you can send it in to us, currentgeek@gmail.com, where right now we have an email from that same address. It's from somebody named Halbert. All right? Sounds like somebody's Muppet friend. It says, hey guys, what one movie left this year are you looking forward to the most?
Rogue One.
We're Rogue One, all right? We got Rogue One. What else we got? Brian, what do you got?
Doctor Strange.
All right. What are you looking forward to, Jamie? I know you don't get movies. Like, you're probably looking forward to Winter Soldier now, right?
Yeah, you know, we're about to get this movie. Actually, you know what? I'm thinking I'm more interested in the Trek than the Star Wars, you know? I'm the science geek. Star Wars might as well be dragons and wizards with swords. You know, hokey religions and antique weapons.
It's no match for a good blaster. I'll give you that.
That's right. So I'm looking forward to the new Trek.
Yeah. You know, if Darth Vader was here, he would force choke you for saying that.
Yeah.
So would my son. He prefers the Sith.
Here's a place where Australia is going to have the advantage, because even though Star Trek Discovery is delayed until May now, when it does come out, you get it commercial free as part of your Netflix subscription.
Yeah.
And,
cool.
And that, we have to go subscribe to CBS All Access. And then if we don't want commercials, we have to pay a little extra for the non-commercial tier.
Yeah, it's going to suck. I'm not looking forward to that. So well done, Australia. You've beat us again.
Woohoo!
So, and by the way, there is something about saying you like Star Trek more than Star Wars, but doing it with a quote that is verbatim and makes you respected Star Wars fan.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's a great
Star Wars, but, you know, I prefer to live in the Trek universe.
That's just a cool trick. I got to use that on more people. It really disarms you. Like, you're looking for a
it's
Star Trek.
It's insulting them while being one of them. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. It looks like it's going to be a nerd fight, and it turned into this nice thing. It was good.
So I could get away with saying, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, dude.
I don't know if that one's enough, but yeah, you got the right idea. You got the right
idea.
I don't
like the Simpsons. Cowabunga.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm gonna throw one in the wrench here, or throw a wrench into the spokes here about which movie. All of the ones you've mentioned I want to see. Oh, no, wait. Did you actually say, Jamie? I'm sorry. I think I cut you off where you gave an actual film. Or no, you said Star Trek. Never mind.
Yeah.
So you did have an answer. So here's mine.
Well, that's not a movie, nor is it coming out before the end of the year.
That's true.
Well, so the most recent Star Trek might not be out in Australia yet, is it?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
All right. Fair enough, then. My mistake.
Yeah.
You really do get things
This
late.
Is the one written by Beyond. Simon Pegg, right?
Yeah.
Star Trek Beyond, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll bet you like it. I still want to see that.
I'll bet you like it.
I still haven't seen Ghostbusters, though. I've got kids. I don't go out.
Yeah.
How delayed are you? Are you looking forward to the Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd one, or are you looking forward to the Melissa McCarthy?
Actually, it's Ghostbusters 2 that's coming out soon, you know, and there's a scene in it I've heard about Beach's pneumatic subway.
That's right.
That's where the ooze is flowing through, exactly. Apparently. I saw it in the trailer.
Wait until you get Temple of Doom. Things are really looking up for movies in Australia. for me, it's Magnificent Seven, which may not surprise some people who know my love of Westerns, but I want them so badly to make a good remake/imagining of that particular story. It's an old story. It's a tropey story. And heck, that old movie's based on the Seven Samurai anyway, but I really want that to be good. And I like the director and I like the cast. And so I really have high hopes for it. So that's the one I'm looking for. And that's like next week, I think. Isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Is it really?
Who's in it? How can they cast those dudes? They were also rugged in the 60s. How are they going to find rugged people?
So they've got...
They got Denzel Washington. Yeah. So that was a good start.
Yeah, he's your Yul Brynner. You got Chris Pratt, right, as the kind of gambler dude. Mm-hmm. You got Ethan Hawke. I forget which character he plays. There's a Mohawk, a sharp-shooting Indian guy who I don't know the actor's name, but he looks amazing. And... Oh, the bear trapper played by the bug in Men
D'Onofrio.
In Black. Vincent D'Onofrio. Yeah. Kingpin.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I mean, it's the right cast, and that guy, Anton Fuqua, knows how to make, I almost swore, knows how to make a good, he knows how to make a good action film, and I'm just excited. Plus, these, you know, think about this. This is the first movie he's done where he's got both Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke back on the same set. Since they did the one he won the Oscar for, what was it called? Training Day. Yeah. So yeah. I like those weird kind of crossovers. So yeah.
Honorable mention to Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them too. I'm pretty excited about that.
Is he supposed to be Dumbledore? Can you tell me that? Is that a spoiler?
Who?
The main actor guy. It's like
no.
Okay. It's not supposed to be.
No, he's the author of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which you could already buy, actually.
No, but right. But he's not. But I mean, the character he's playing in the movie. And it's set in like the 40s or something, right?
The 20s.
He's playing
the
young Stephen Hawking.
And he meets up with his wife, who is a rebel. That's why she rebels.
Nice. But I thought he... Somebody told me he plays Albus Dumbledore in that story. No?
No.
Okay.
Somebody's messing with you.
They were pulling the wool over your eyes.
I knew you'd know. I've read those other books a million times, but this stuff's
all new. In fact, Albus Dumbledore writes the introduction to Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the one that you can buy.
Okay. And there's nothing in the trailer where somebody goes, Albus, throw me the thing or whatever. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
You're actually Dumbledore. No, that's not in the trailer.
None of those. All right, good. All right. Anyway, if you'd like to send your own emails in, just like Halbert here did, you can send them to currentgeek@gmail.com. Please do. We'd love to get them. And that is going to do it for the show. Oh my goodness, I've enjoyed this one. Let's make sure we give people a chance once more to say where they can be found. Jamie, where can people find your music and on the internet in general?
Yeah, look for The Jimmy C on iTunes, YouTube. I've got thejimmyc.com and a Bandcamp, Facebook, all those things. I'm all over it.
iTunes, Apple Music tells me The Man Who Never Dies is your most popular song. Is that correct?
Well, there you go. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's right here. If you have a Spotify or Apple streaming, it looks like you can get your music. Yep, here we go. The Adventures of Super 7. Oh, I got to go through all this stuff. Brian Ibbett, where can you be found, sir?
Basically everything Coverville, and then for the new Soundography stuff, soundography.com, and Twitter, The Soundography.
Nice. And of course, every day, pretty much every week with me and Brian.
Oh, well, of course, TMS. Mic. But yeah. If they don't know about, if they're listening to this show and they don't know about TMS, then
they're
I
lame.
Don't think we want them.
Yeah, they're lame. We don't want them. Tom Merritt, now that you're back and home, what is it you want eyeballs looking at?
Oh, well, folks, if you haven't heard, FSLTonight.com is back. We're almost 5 weeks into the season. If you want some actual fantasy in your fantasy sports, you got to check it out. The Xandar Guardians of the Galaxy have the best record in the league right now. They are hotly pursued by the Skaro Exterminators, the Coruscant Senators leading the opposite division. The Arkham Angels, though, even though they had a rough start, are starting to show some promise here. So anyway, it's taking science fiction, fantasy, comic tropes, putting them in a sports-like package, and having Justin Robert and Young and I have way too much fun talking about it. You can find it at FSLTonight.com.
It's a good time for everybody. Go check it out. I think that's going to do it for the show. Thank you all for being here. Everybody in the chat room, everybody who listened live, and those at home, you're all awesome. Call us and leave us voicemails, 801-471-0462. CurrentGeek.com for everything else. Current Geek on Twitter, of course. And don't forget our Reddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time. Bonk, bonk.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review the new hot game, No Man's Sky, and the potential patent infringement controversy facing the developer, Hello Games. No Man's Sky finally hit store shelves in early August. The novelty in No Man's Sky is that the universe that can be explored is procedurally generated by a system of rules and parameters that can allow over 18 quintillion different types of planets to be accessed. As such, this game approaches the infinite diversity and infinite combinations of the real galaxy more so than any other space exploration game before it. The game has had mixed user and critic reviews, but there's no doubt it's a commercial success. However, one thing that almost delayed the game further may still be a huge concern for Hello Games, and that is a potential patent infringement lawsuit from a patent owner named Jinnekap Bahir from the Netherlands. Jinnekap recently had a patent issued in April 2016, U.S. patent number 9317627. The patent boils down to using a mathematical formula, called the super formula, to make varying patterns and shapes which create simulated plants, landscapes, and the like over different times on an amusement device. That sounds a lot like the procedural generation of planets and landscapes done in No Man's Sky, and indeed, there have been rumors and claims that Hello Games also used the same super formula as is recited in Jinnekap's patent to make No Man's Sky. That would appear to be literal patent infringement. But there's a catch. This is the type of software or abstract idea patent that has been under incredible scrutiny at the patent office and in the courts over the past 5 years. Under U.S. patent law, abstract ideas like math formulas cannot be patented without the recitation of something more than just a generic computer implementing that formula. It appears that Jinnekap successfully argued that this something more was the limits of performing this process on an amusement device and separating these images over time to display widely varying natural scenery. That might be enough to avoid invalidation of the patent, because it could be argued that this does not lock up the super formula from use in all fields. But it's no guarantee, as reasonable minds will differ on whether this is enough to meet the rules for adding enough substance to be able to claim an invention based heavily in an abstract idea like a math formula. That means Hello Games could be at risk of paying significant damages and fighting expensive patent litigation if Jinnekap wants to press this issue. The bottom line is, there's no telling if Hello Games will actually be successfully sued for patent infringement. On the bright side, No Man's Sky did finally get to gamers, so at least this patent issue has not stopped consumers from enjoying this innovative space exploration game. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter, at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.